Are you wanting to create a highly prosperous photography business doing what you love? Or maybe you have a great business already and want to up your game? Then you're in the right place. Master Craftsman photographer Lucy Dumas and her guests are here to support you on your journey. Now here's your hostess and tour guide, Lucy.
The key is not spending time, but investing it. And that is a quote by Stephen R. Covey, who, if you've not heard his name, you might want to research, and probably many of us listening, including, I guess I'm listening to myself, have heard of Stephen Covey. All right. I'm super excited to talk to the lovely and fun Betsy Bird today. Before we get started, I do want to remind you that Lucy Dumas Coaching is where you can learn more about me, and feel free to book a 20-minute call, no obligation. But if you want a little feedback on website or pricing, or just to say howdy and get a little, you know, cheerleader on your side, just go ahead and book a call, because I love conversation and I love to share. All right. So the Miss Betsy Queen of the Day, she has a business called Ride the Sky Equine Photography. So she's a horsey girl. She's a CPP with PPA. If you don't know what that means, it's a certified professional photographer. And when she's not doing insane things to try to get horses to look at her, she is investing in her business and also mentoring photographers and hanging out with her dog. And her gorgeous award-winning work has been featured in so many places. She's been on the Business Animal Podcast, Chatter Magazine, Scenic Trend, The Chattanoogan, because she's from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and shout out DFW, just to name a few. But she's also not just a great horse photographer and pet photographer, but is a whiz at business, including branding, goal setting, and time management. So I'm excited, Betsy. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Lucy. Yeah. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. We've had to reschedule over the holidays, and, you know, it's well past the holidays, but divine timing. I'm sure those of you that are listening right now are like, oh man, that was just what I needed to hear right now. So I'm just trusting how life unfolds.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll have some information that will help somebody out right now.
I know we will. So I would love to know a little of your background. I know you have some background in horses, and also just a little about how you then were like, I think I'm going to photograph these beautiful creatures and make money at it. So in just a couple of minutes, can you share?
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in the middle of the country on a horse boarding farm. We were actually right outside of Athens, Georgia, where the University of Georgia is. Mm-hmm. And so we had a lot of the students from the University of Georgia who used to board with us for their horses. And over the years and everything, I was always into the riding and the showing and, you know, everything else related to horses. My mother is also kind of a horse girl, so I come by it naturally. And my father was a amateur photographer for years until he retired, and then he kind of went semi-pro. So I sort of ended up building a business, I think, that sort of took the best of both my parents' world. When my daughter came along, she was into horses and riding and everything like that. So it started out for me where I was just photographing her at shows, which of course then expanded to her and all her friends and her barn. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of grew from there. And though I don't do any sort of shows anymore, I work more with on the portrait side and with business, equine and equestrian businesses and stuff. But I still like to go to them and watch at least. Mm-hmm. But it has always kind of been the way that I connect with both my parents.
Yeah, I love it. So what this reminds me of is something I wrote down. It feels like it was in my 20s, and it was somebody saying, how do you figure out what to do with your life? And the quote is, watch what your hand falls to naturally, and then do more of that. And I would say in my life, that is so totally true. And as I've reinvented myself from wedding photographer to portrait baby photographer, expanding into portraits, and then coaching and now podcasting, it's just been like the next thing that feels right. And like you, I see a lot of similarities between my career path and my father's. So I love hearing that. My dad was a pastor. And one day I was leaving a wedding and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm working in churches on the weekend, like dad.
Just like him.
And one day I realized when I was feeling stressed about the next episode of my podcast, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm having a sermon once a week like my dad. So
you kind of are.
Yeah. So I love, and also I chose my career for passion and love and to give what I have to give. And the money is the part that supports doing that, like my dad. So I love hearing that you, your background or your current foreground.
Well, you know, it actually was not my original plan. I actually came to photography a little bit later in life. But I, you know, was working in the corporate world for a long time before I had kids. And then when I had kids, I had three under the age of three. And that I was staying at home. And I kind of quickly realized that if I did not have an outlet of some kind that actually involved me talking to grownups, I was going to lose my mind. I was just not I love my kids and I love to hang out with them, but I needed something else. So my background is actually in branding and marketing. Mm-hmm. And so I started a company that was a marketing company, and it worked with startup entrepreneurs in a variety of industries who could not afford a full-time marketing person like mm-hmm. right then, but they needed some marketing guidance. So I was doing that. And then I decided I needed to have some sort of like creative outlet. And I was like, that's what I was doing on the side, was photographing the horses and going mm-hmm. to the shows as Riley got older and whatnot. And then I just got to the point where both businesses were doing really, really well. And it was too much for me. I had a husband who traveled with his job. I had three kids to keep track of and get where they needed to go. Mm-hmm. And then I had two businesses that were demanding an awful lot of time. And so I had to figure out which one I thought, you know, where does my hand fall?
Right.
Where is my heart lay? And, you know, that was when I decided to kind of scale down on the marketing side of everything and go more into the photography side of things.
Well, what I love about that is that you have a background that supports your next thing, that I imagine the success that you have and what we want to dive into today first is about business strategies and how to handle a busy life and be successful without making yourself crazy. So I love that. Now, back to my background, I always babysat. I worked in a children's store. I was given a little business in the airport in my 20s. So all of that was foundation for, and I always loved weddings. If people are listening and thinking, what do I want to do with my life? Or, you know, what should I specialize in? I always suggest you look at your background, you know, the choices you made before. So that that's a little bonus for you, that you had this other solid background when it wasn't so personal. Because I don't know about you, but because I know you support photographers as well, but so many people tie their self-worth or their need for approval to their photography rather than seeing that as a product that has nothing to do with whether we're lovable or good enough. So I'm just guessing that because you learned business and did business first, was it easier to then be like, oh, I'm selling photographs and it's not about if I'm worth breathing air. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'll stop babbling and let you talk.
Well, you know, and I think a lot of photographers, as you're saying, they think to themselves, you know, somebody comes up to them and they don't know how to price their photography because they're either really, really attached to it and they can't, you know, they're like, this is my baby that I created and I can't let it go. Right. Mm-hmm. Or they're like, why would anyone want to pay me that much for this? Because right. It's not worth that. It's one or the other extreme usually, mm-hmm. you know, and they're very caught in that. And I spend a lot of time telling people, you know, you're worth any, I mean, you know, there's people out there who will buy a banana nailed to a wall for $1 million. Yeah. You know, there are people out there who will pay, you know, $5,000 for a golden looking paperclip. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. like you can ask whatever you want for your photography and there will be someone out there who pays it. Now, whether you are able to get that in front of the right person, your art in front of the right person, that's where the marketing and branding side of things kind of comes into.
Right.
So, you know, but you know, a lot of us creatives, we are very attached to our stuff through a sentimental worth. You know, and it's hard to let things go, you know, for any price.
Right.
I know I had a hard time with that when I first started.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, then I got over it when I realized I could actually make a living doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing that I realized is we actually are kind of cheating when we're doing portrait photography. Pet photography, because we're selling people themselves and what they love. So when someone says yes or no to a beautiful portrait of a horse in a field that they're going to put as art in their walls and they say yes or they say no, it's not because of our own worthiness. It's because of the value they place on the subjects, as well as our own ability to, you know, market and sell to the right people and the whole thing. But getting our ego out of it, it makes it less devastating if they don't want it. You know, not taking it personally if someone is not excited about what we're doing. So, yeah.
You know, I've always worked one-on-one for the most part with clients. You know, it was you were selling them pictures of their animal
right.
and everything. And it wasn't until I was in business for a few years before I actually had somebody who came up to me and said, I saw this picture on social media and I absolutely love it and I want it for my wall. And it was somebody who had nothing to do with that animal. And that was really kind of the first time it sunk into my brain that, you know, there are people out there who just love a fantastic picture of a beautiful animal.
Mm.
And, you know, like now I do that regularly where I sell photos of, you know, different horses and dogs multiple times to people. And
really?
It's just really surprising to me because it's just what people gravitate to. And, you know, like I have a picture here that's been pretty popular because it features a very famous bridge in Chattanooga, which is the Walnut Street Bridge. It's a walking bridge and it's very pretty, very blue and everything. Mm-hmm. And I got permission from the city to be able to photograph one of the horses up there on that bridge, which is, you know, horses are not normally allowed up there.
No.
But that's like my best selling photo as far as multiple people. And I think it's because it's got the Chattanooga look to it.
Right.
But also it's got a pretty phenomenal horse up there. You know, never know what people are going to resonate with and what's going to sink in. And, you know, as a business owner, you have to be willing to take, you know, opportunity when it strikes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, I had a lady the other day who wanted that specific picture for her next door neighbor's daughter, who was a horse girl. And she was like, I saw that picture and I think she would love it. And I want to buy it for her.
So how are people buying your photography? That is a, you know, really great thought. And I've got lots of beautiful personal work, but I've never put the work into selling it because just keeping a business running in photography, which we're going to talk about in a minute, is how you do that.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah, but how do you sell? Like, how do people see your work?
Well, honestly, I have not put as much time and effort in as many people do on that. You know, there's a lot of people who will do stuff off of websites like fine art photography and stuff like that, where they're setting up websites that are designed to sell art. Mm-hmm. I just haven't done that. Mine usually come from people who see it on social media, or they're on my newsletter list and they happen to see a picture that I put in there and they reach out and say, I'd like to buy that.
Wow.
I don't even promote those. It's just kind of one-off sales for me.
Do you have a link where they can look at pricing and things, or you just...
I usually talk to them individually because of the fact that... So I specialize in wall art and custom albums and things like that for my clients. So I have a pretty broad product base. So I customize any order. So I will get the person on the phone and talk to them about, you know, like, what wall do you want to put this on? And, you know, I'll have them send me a picture, like a snapshot of the wall, and we'll talk through sizes. We'll talk through different types. You know, should it be a canvas? Do you like metals? You know, this is what acrylics are. Yeah. This is what prints are. I'll send them back and forth different, you know, examples of products and things. So everything ends up being very customized, and I, you know, price quote it based off of what, you know, they're leaning towards.
Interesting. So you approach the fine art sales the same as you do the portrait of someone's own.
And, you know, that might be just me, and I could probably do it more efficiently, but I honestly really like talking to people about pictures and their walls and what do they want in their home and why do they gravitate towards an image of an animal that they don't even know, you know, like what is it about that? And so it tends to be kind of an interesting conversation usually. And I've actually had people who have ended up coming back to me from that and, you know, buying portraits for their own animals and stuff. So, you know, it's a good way to develop kind of a future client base as well.
Yeah, I just love it. So it reminds me, one of my local photography friends that's in my women's creative photography group has a similar service. It's all she does is she makes fine art, particularly with animals and birds, fine art photography, and all of her sales are done personally, where they send photos of the walls, or she might go to their home and she gives recommendations. She'll just show a few and say, you know, I think these would go well. So I love that you're doing it that way as well, doing in-person sales of fine art, in addition to, of course, I'm guessing in-person sales of your portraits. So yeah, her name is Char. I think her last name is Webster. And you can look up her work and she and Betsy are both doing, I don't know, I'm off on a, like my brain is, my brain suddenly just emptied. But anyway, I love it. And that is so encouraging.
In-person sales for me was the only way I could run a business, you know, due to the time constraints that I have in my life. I could not be a volume photographer. I could not be the type of person who could be at a shoot for 9 hours all day long and shoot, you know, like 20 kids or something and turn it around super fast and, you know, be the next day doing, you know, the same thing over and over. I just couldn't do that in my life. So in-person sales, I basically started with that.
Cool.
And that worked really well because I could take fewer clients and spend more time with them, get to know them, and, you know, have like a higher price point because of that, because I had products.
Right. I'm always all about time for dollars. Like, where, besides the fact that I'm guessing, like me, you also think that wall art and books are really the best that can enjoy. But besides that, it's the best way to put more money in our pockets for less time and energy if that's what we like to do. So we're in the same team here. So I want to dive into your working smarter, not harder. I'll just say formula, or let's talk about workflow and efficiency and how the heck you have, you said three kids?
I have three.
And dog and so many obligations in your life, but yet you manage to have an efficient and highly profitable, I assume, business. So let's talk about all of that.
So let me preface this by saying that when my kids are a little bit older now, I've got my youngest two just started college. They're twins. So they just started college. One of them's still here at the house. One of them is out of the house. And then my oldest is still here at the house as well. But when they were younger and I had first started working, the marketing business worked pretty well for me because of the fact that I could do so much of it in the middle of the night. I could do my meetings online. I could schedule meetings when kids were napping and stuff like that. So that worked really well. As I started getting more into the photography, there was a lot more limitations, you know, on time, because you can only photograph at certain, you know, you're not going to photograph a horse in the middle of the night. It can be a little dark, you know, or you need to be at a show or something like that, you know, and it's at a scheduled time. So there was a little bit more restrictions to that. And then my kids, when they got to middle school, I had one of my kids who got really, really sick. And so much so that he missed 7 months of one grade of school, and they weren't able to diagnose him. We were going to specialist after specialist trying to figure out what was going on with him. And we ended up having to take him down to Atlanta to a specialist down there, which was a pediatric neurogastrointestinologist. And there's only about four of those offices in the country. And so there's a lot of wait time to get in and everything. That, when he was out of school, meant that we hired a tutor who had to come to the house for about 4 hours a day with him and be working with him while he was simultaneously sick, which was really not fun for anyone involved in that situation.
Right. I'm sorry that you all went through that.
It took about, it basically has taken until now for him to really outgrow most of the issues. So that really put some restrictions on me, because my husband was either, when he was working one job, he was busy all the time with that, or he was traveling all the time. Right. And so I had to be at the beck and call of doctors, or we ended up at the ER multiple times.
Sure.
Doctor's offices are only open at certain times.
And
then there was a lot of school things that I had to do, because we had to work with the school, we had to work with the tutors, we had to work, you know, to keep him on track, because the last thing we wanted was to have one child who was not, who was a year behind his twin brother. We didn't want that to happen.
So clearly you were super busy.
So how we solved that?
clearly, I'm sure the listeners are thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I couldn't get anything done in that, but you created solutions and supported, grew your business and so forth. So talk to me about.
Okay. So how we do that for one, I'm kind of type A, like in general. And I'm really big on breaking things down, like big goals. So I always kind of thought to myself, I've got a goal that's 5 years out, you know, 5 years from now, this is where I want to be. Okay. And so I literally would sit there at night, because we ended up being up many, many nights. And I would sit there and break down, well, 5 years from now, I want to be at X spot. So how do I get there? Well, what does that mean I have to do in each year in those 5 years? I've got to accomplish, you know, these smaller goals, you know, each year to get me there. And then I broke it down from the year, I broke it down to the quarter. And then from the quarters, I broke it down to the months. And then I broke it down to the weeks. And once I got down to the weeks, it's really easy to say in a week, I need to do this one thing. Like, I have got to make these phone calls, or, you know, I need to do research on this subject matter or whatever. If it's a smaller goal like that, it's easy to progress as each week is going by. And then you look back at the end of a year and you're like, wow, I got 52 things done. I've moved myself this much further. When you're in the chaos, you know, of everyday life and of every, you know, thing that you're trying to get done, mm-hmm. it's really, really hard, or I guess it's really easy to lose sight of what you're accomplishing. So if you set those goals and you break them down, and then you're literally looking at, you know what, today I needed to call about a permit. Mm. That took 5 minutes of my day to call about a permit. I can totally do that at lunchtime, right? Mm-hmm. And I've already moved my goalposts forward. And that's how I do it, is I just literally break big things down into tiny little chunks.
Got it.
And it's really hard when you're looking at it to see that you're progressing, because it seems like so small. Mm-hmm. But it's not. I mean, you know, 3 months down the road, you're like so much further ahead than where you were. And then if you have like a little extra time, then you do the next week's thing. You know, you bump it forward a little bit and mm-hmm. you're just moving a little bit at a time. You know, you have to send certain emails. Well, you can send an email in the middle of the night if that's when you're up.
Right.
You know, you can do that. So that's what I did.
Okay. So to summarize a little bit, when you were in a situation where you knew you needed to work smarter, not harder, you got that bird's eye view of like, where am I going? What do I want to do? And then with the time that you had to think through that, you chunked it down into what was your 5 year, so now 4 year, what needs to happen, 3 year, 2 year, 1 year, and then this year, month by month, and then week by week. So it kind of feeds that expression, if you want to get something done, find a busy person. And I think the reason for that is because in order to have a life and move forward when you're super busy, you have to create systems. You have to be organized. I know I had a major health situation where I had a tumor, benign, but a tumor in my sinus that was not going to stop growing, and eventually it would blind me, then kill me. And we didn't want that.
So, I would be on board with not having that happen to
yeah. So in 2010, I had several surgeries and things, and I would know I was going to be down for the count for a time. And so that compelled me to make those, what do I need to do before it's the day to surrender myself to the care of doctors and nurses. And then in 2014, there was one big major surgery, brain surgery, and I knew I'd be down for the count. And honestly, 2010 and 2014 were two of my best years money-wise. And it's because in the time that I had, and sometimes like with you, when I went to the doctors, which becomes like a part-time career, I think you,
very much so.
You know what I'm talking about. It would be a 2 hour wait always. I don't know why why it was that way, but I would bring work. I'd bring my breakfast or my lunch, and I would just, it was like my office for 2 hours until it was time to come. So things that we don't want to have happen in life can actually give us skills that are really useful when we're not in the middle of all that. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think there's two things there with what you're saying. One is the fact that you knew you were going to have downtime, you know, like that you couldn't work. And so because of that, you probably planned much more about what you could get done before, what you needed to have done, you know, so that you could have that off time. And knowing that, you know, when you know I'm not going to be able to work for 6 weeks or something, I think, you know, inevitably we're all like, okay, well, 6 weeks, what do I have to get done before then? And you get it all done.
Right.
you know, you set up those systems that you need. I do a lot of systems like business workflow systems. I mean, if somebody sends me an email in the middle of the night, they get a response immediately, but I'm asleep, you know, like I have all that stuff, you know, doing its own thing. And I'm just out of it and snoring away in dreamland.
Okay. So I just want to, it's like a fish that's swimming by and I want to catch it. But it's catch and release to everyone out there around the world. We'll release it to you. Sometimes I interrupt myself and my thoughts and go babble on, but anyway, here I come back. That you set up a lot of automation.
Yes.
For things that you don't need to like write a new email with every inquiry or, you know, whatever it is, you find ways to streamline the things that you don't need to do.
Let me tell you a little bit about how I do that too. As I said, I'm really big on breaking things down. I'm really big on looking at when I have time to do things in a calendar year, which because like with horse photography, I tend to be pretty busy, you know, in spring and fall. Those are the two busiest. And then it's slower. I mean, I'm still doing stuff, but it's slower in like winter and summer because of either heat or mud or, you know, whatever is going on. So in winter and summer, I almost always do a lot of the back end stuff that I do for my business. And I tend to time block and task block things. So in order to do like task blocking, what I do is I say, I want to publish 28 blog posts this year. like so, which is about one every other week, right?
Right.
So I write them all at the same time. I sit down, I write 28 blog posts, I schedule them, I do all the graphics for them, I do everything like that, and then I don't think about it again for a year or 6 months or 3 months, you know, however you want to do it. Social media, I do the same way. I, you know, tend to do like social media 3 months out. Like if I can do all the graphics and sit down and do it in a day or something and get it done, then I don't have to think about it for a while. Right. You know, I still have to hop on there and like, you know, interact and stuff like that, but I don't have to think about it. I write my email newsletters like that too. I'll write them all at one big block and then I just schedule them out so I don't have to do anything with it. It's really freeing when you know that that back end stuff is happening and, you know, like that marketing side is happening, but you're not having to be involved in it day to day. And I don't know about you, but there's a lot of people out there who sit down in front of a computer and they're like, I have to write something for social media today. And their brain freezes.
Right.
And they're just like, I don't have anything to say. What am I going to say?
Right.
You know? Well,
and what I appreciate about the first part of sharing this is there are slow times in most of our businesses. Now, if we're a newborn photographer or, I don't know, probably commercial photographers, I don't know if they have the same cycle, but it could be because of the weather. It could be like with wedding photographers, there are, you know, times in San Diego, there are people that do get married in January and have sunshine, but there's more people that get married in certain times. So what I see sometimes people doing during those slow times is panicking because they don't have work and scrambling instead of what you just said is use that time that you know is going to probably happen most years to do that back end work, that business work. I love that. Now I'm a big encourager of having virtual assistants help us with all that stuff too. But somebody needs to do it. And if we're do it all myself people at that point, I love what you're saying is take those times to plan and to set things up in a way where then when it's busy, you're not worrying about, oh my gosh, I've also got to do this and I need to do a blog post or I'm not posting on social media. I don't have time. It's like, do the work in the quiet times that is not available but will be in those busy times. So,
well, and truthfully, as you said, with outsourcing stuff, using a VA and everything like that, I think it's really important if you are a person who has a limited time, you know, like that they can dedicate to something, that they really sit down and think about what it is that they like to do and that they're good at, and what it is that they don't like to do, or what's a real time suck for them. Because if you can outsource something that you hate doing, or you can outsource something that you're just really not good at, and somebody else can do it in 5 minutes flat, why wouldn't you? Because you could take that time that you would have spent doing something that made you miserable or something that you're just not good at, and you could dedicate it to something that you are good at or that can get you more money. You could go shoot another client. You could, you know, be working on networking or something. There's any number of things that you can dedicate that time to, you know, especially when you have limited time.
Right.
And I see even with, like in my local photography guild, we have a lot of photographers who have come to photography kind of later in life. And, you know, maybe they have a full-time job and they're doing, you know, trying to start a photography business kind of on the side and everything. So they have limited hours of what they have available. And like for them, that's one of the things I think about all the time is, you know, starting a business when you don't have a business background or you don't know what you're doing to do that can be a daunting task. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you know that you can do well on that? And what do you need guidance on, or you need to outsource to somebody else and let them handle for you?
Right, right.
And then, of course, we're in the, you know, right now we're in the age of AI and being able to use AI to do, you know, to speed up tasks that you aren't good at.
Yeah.
And everything. And so that's a whole nother
ball. Whole other story. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. So, I had a little thought in there. Oh, so I have this tool that's called the cake or cringe pyramid. And the cake is what you like to do. And the cringe is what, you know, you really do. Not do. And so you write out everything, all your cringy stuff and all your cake stuff. And then the pyramid is at the top of the pyramid is things that have to get done. And then the middle, you know, you need to do, and the bottom, yeah, if you could do it, that'd be good. And so then you rank those cringe ones on one side and cakey ones on the other side and take a look at the things. Now, there are some cringe things that have to be done by the photographer, the owner of the business, but primarily things you can't outsource. You know, if you want to be the prime photographer, or if you're the best salesperson or the only salesperson. And so that's a way to take a look at how and what to outsource.
Mine was always the first thing that I outsourced was the accounting and the money.
Oh,
side
yes.
of things, because it is just not my forte. I mean, I can do it, but I'm not great at it and I don't enjoy it. And so I was like, the first thing I wanted to do was hire an accountant. Like, just take that off my plate. So I didn't have to worry about that.
Right.
But like, on the other hand, like, I really like being with my clients.
Yes.
Like, I like to talk to them. I like to hang out with them. I love to see them when I'm out and about and chat with them and all that. So like anything that was client facing, you know, I wanted to be the one. I know there's people who like outsource their IPS process to someone else because they don't want to do the sales part. And, you know, I like to do that. I like to hang out with them and walk them through, you know, like what we're doing and what we're building for their homes and that sort of stuff. But I also like to see them in the barns and, you know, hang out with them.
Yeah.
So there's just certain things you just really have to think it through as to what it is you really like to do and what is a waste of your time.
Right.
Or that anyone can do. And then you build your systems around that, you know.
One of the things I want to, I think in the pyramid, I would, if I were going to advance the usefulness, would be to put those things that we might not like to do because we're not comfortable, because we're afraid. So like people who are, and you and I were talking before I started recording, sadly, about introversion versus extroversion. And a lot of the younger people in the world, there's a lot of social anxiety that was not a conversation like 15 years ago. So within that, you know, what do I like to do and need to do? What are your thoughts about how to determine whether it's something that is really just a lack of habit, knowledge, skill, something you're afraid to do that really should be in our wheelhouse as a photographer? Do you have, I'm guessing, Betsy, you have some thoughts on that.
Well, you know, for one thing, I think every photographer's different, just like every person's different. Like their skill set is different, what their interests are, what their background is, which, you know, your background, no matter what you did previously prior to coming to, you know, photography, be it that you worked in the corporate world or you ran a business or you went straight into photography right out of high school, you know, whatever it is, that's going to play a part in the makeup that makes you the photographer that you are.
Right.
So trying to figure out, I mean, I don't think there's like a one size fits all, but I do think, like, I personally am a visual learner, and I think there's a very large percent of the population that is. So mm-hmm. one of the things that I found most helpful to me when trying to figure out what I can get rid of, what's just busy work, what I'm really good at, what I need to do, is I write it out on a big piece of paper, you know, and mm-hmm. like stick it in front of my face. So I see it like all the time. It's like usually right behind my desk. So I sit there and I write out, like, and, you know, kind of think of it as like a mood board, you know, how like people are a vision board where people are like, this is where I want to be. And, you know, I do that, but I do it with how I'm going to get where I want to get and how I'm going to loosen up time that I need. You know, like, so I look at things that are on my list and I say, is this something that gets me where I need to go? Or is this something that's just here to keep me busy? And if it's just here to keep me busy, it either needs to be outsourced to somebody else, they can deal with it, or it needs to go away. You know, like, it's not progressing, right? And so when I do that and I start kind of whittling down my list, then I look at things like, you know, I can outsource this to someone who's faster than me or better than me.
Right.
Because we are not good at all things. I'd love to say I am the best at everything I could possibly want to do, but that's not the case. I have my skill sets that, you know, I have brought into the world just like any other person. And being able to identify those things in yourself is really important. And I think a lot of times, and you probably see this a lot in your coaching, I would think, is that sometimes you need someone outside of your head to recognize it in you.
Right.
Like, and to say, well, why are you doing that if it's not something you enjoy, that you're not good at, that you know, like, it's not serving you well when you could be doing something else that would serve you well.
Right.
I see that a lot, and I'm betting you do too in your coaching clients, that once you say something to them, they're like, oh, yeah. Never even thought about that before.
Right. And also what I see, and I had to go through this process too, is how people organize, how people, there's not a one size fits all with systems either. And some people need the whiteboard. Some people can do a CRM and do everything online, and they're always going to go online and check what's new and follow through on that. And, you know, there's discovering for yourself, and that's where, you know, getting help from somebody who can see the big picture for you too can be helpful, is figuring out what can actually work. Some of my clients, we come up with really great strategies that they're going to do after we de-Zoom, unmount from Zoom. But that first step is they get stuck there. So we have to figure out, you know, that step off the curb, or I don't know if I'm totally making sense. But basically, the way that some people organize is not the only way. And, you know, I've had to strategize for myself to figure that out, because I'm an idea person, and I get overwhelmed with too many to-dos. And I'm also, I suffer a little, some minor non-debilitating anxiety. And so too many things can just send me, you know, down that rabbit hole. And so I have to, you know, my way of staying organized, staying on top of things is different than it might be for someone where having all those details laid out and following along for 5 years is empowering.
You know, I think that I'm going to give a little shout out to my son's high school that they went to, because it was a school for kids who have learning disabilities. So everyone there at the school has like ADHD or dyslexia or autism or something like that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that that school did that is just absolutely amazing is that they taught every concept multiple ways.
Mm.
So like they taught it for people who were auditory learners, you know, they would lecture. For people who were visual learners, they had a way of teaching it, you know, that a visual learner could learn. For people who learned through touch and, you know, actually physically doing something, they had another way that they would do that. And every concept was taught that way. And that was just an amazing thing to see in a school environment, because that's not how like the typical school teaches. But I think that when you get out into the business world and stuff like that, you really need to know how you learn best. Because if you learn by actually physically doing it, and you're trying to learn by watching a video where someone lectures you, it's not going to work for you. It's right. Just like a disconnect, right? And you'll get stuck. You can't move forward.
Right.
So you have to figure out the ways that you learn, and then find the way that you can do that and how you can incorporate that in your life, you know, be it a coach or a mentor, be it, you know, videos, you know, Zooms with other people, mm-hmm. you know, webinars, in-person learning, classes, networking, you know, et cetera. And I think once you get a grip on how you learn and you start seeking out those ways to learn, a lot more falls into place for you. Because,
right.
you know, not everybody needs a coach or will learn well with a coach, or they'll.
Oh, sure,
go
they do.
Through a,
just kidding.
Yes, absolutely. 100% coaching is the only way to go, people. But, you know, like you can spend time with a client and you can tell them everything and break it down for them. And you can be like, this is what they do. But then when they're on their own and they're just like, I can't take that first step. I need somebody to right. hold my hand and get me through that, you know, and they can't quite make it. So I think knowing what way you learn can really, really help with getting where you want to go as well.
Yes.
And figuring that out. So if you're the type of person who, like where I said earlier that I do time blocking and task blocking and stuff like that, when I went to set up my CRM and, you mm-hmm. know, like get all of my workflows for my CRM, I literally did it in 1 week. And that was the only thing I did that week. Mm-hmm. And I literally had it broken down to, you know what, this morning I'm going to write every single email that I might possibly need for a client.
Right.
You know, and then I'm going to do this. And then there was one day where I spent literally just building the workflows I needed and mm-hmm. setting those up. That worked great for me, because
yeah.
that's the type of person that I am.
And to but me, that...
are you having anxiety? You're like, no, let's not do that.
I'd love to do that. So what I do that's similar, but a little less like all of it all at once, is getting big chunks, but then figuring out in the next 3 months, what are two or three things, and then break down all the tasks and then calendar those tasks and pay attention. And so there's a really great test. It's called the Kolbe test, KOLBE.com. And it tests how you get things done. It's not a personality test. It's a how do you function in the world effectively. And for me, I learned that I'm high on what's called quick start, which means I'm always full of ideas, and all of those ideas have all kinds of things that need to be done, and it's not possible to do them all. And so I learned from my coach, she's the one that turned me on to this Kolbe test, that I needed goals, and I needed to remind myself when I was wanting to go off in a tangent, right now, and this is what I'm working on right now. Right now, we're working on getting reels included in my marketing of my show and my people like you, my guests on my show, and getting reels done. And that's my project right now. So if I get like, oh, I'm going to go, you're going to come on back, Lucy. This quarter, you are focusing on these two things. And what I learned is if I were as detailed on something as the common wisdom says I should be, it drags me down. I need to be able to fly a little bit. Whereas some people, many people, they need to have all the ducks in a row before they can leap forward. So that's a really great resource that I've used on myself.
And to check that out. I've never heard of that.
Kolbe. It also helps if people have children. You can, once you kind of get into it, you can figure out how people are. And if my mom had understood all of this about me, because I think simply labeling ADHD with maybe I have a little of that, but knowing it's my brain pattern, it's my system, she might have been less frustrated with the amount of clutter and more helpful at helping me coordinate. Like, I'm a piler, not a filer. You file it, it's like you threw it away if you put it in a drawer. Unless, like, I know where my silverware is because I use that all the time. So instead of her, you know, standing in the door of my bedroom with her hands on her hips, shaming me for clutter, in the perfect world, she might have figured out what kinds of things give me those wings. So it's a really great resource for parents as well.
Well, as you were talking about ADHD, you know, like there's several different types of ADHD, and I have two kids here who have ADHD and they have different types. And I think the knowledge of how you learn and like what you said about being a piler, not a filer. I have one who's an absolute piler and can put her hands on anything in a pile.
Right.
I break out into hives walking past her room because it's just not me.
Yeah.
You know, but knowing what works for you, you know, knowing you don't need it completely broken down. You need it to be like a 3-month process that you can kind of work on and take a break and work on. Knowing that's how you learn, knowing that's how you progress, it's going to help you, you know, build your business further, faster than trying to do it the way I do it. You know, that's one of the things I tell people all the time. I'm like, listen, I'm type A all the way. I am all about like breaking things down. But, you know, other people will go insane trying to do what I do sometimes.
Right.
You know, and like you have to know how you learn.
Yeah. And I'm a recovering type A. I aspire to be a B+. Because there's a little breathing room around that.
I'd like to be an A-.
Yeah. See, but that's too much pressure for me now, you know, to be close to perfect. But it takes different flavors. And what I've learned working with professional organizers over the years and studying it and reading, I really like Getting Things Done, GTD, David, I can't remember his last name, David Allen. That helped me a lot. But I learned to have my piles be effective piles. I have a little, you know, I have places and I have ways that I put things and reminders and on the internet, you know, I can't, like, I don't shut down tabs because I'll remember, oh yeah, I was working on that thing. So yeah. So we are out of time, but I have two questions for you before we say adieu. One, how do people get in touch with you? How do they see your work, or if they have questions about anything or want to know about, you know, how to be an awesome horse photographer, whatever you're available for, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, you can always find me on my website, which is ridetheskyequine.com. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram, and it's Ride the Sky Equine on both of them.
Great. And it's all in the show notes. So I need to take a breath here. Oh, this is so much good stuff. And Betsy, I wish you lived next door or down the street so we could hang out. And
I think we would have some fun conversations.
Yes. And some fun. Yeah. What either haven't you shared that you might be like, oh gosh, I wish I had remembered to say that? Or what is a parting thought that you'd like to leave us with?
Oh, geez. Now you're putting me on the spot and I got to think of something. What's my parting thought? Well, I think I would like to say that for anyone who has considered starting a business and they think to themselves, you know, I'm working a full-time job or my family life is too chaotic or there's some reason that they can't. I think one, it's important to follow your passion. And if your passion is photographing things, whether you start a business or not, to keep doing that, you know, like, because we all need that, something that's just relaxing for us and enjoyable for us in our life. But if you do want to start a business and you're thinking to yourself, my life is chaotic and I just don't have the time and stuff, you don't have to start big. All you have to do is start small. And, you know, every baby step you take will get you closer to where you need to be. And, you know, if you look back 5 years from now, you'll be in a totally different place than you are, as long as you start. So I think that would be my parting thought.
I love it. So like Dory, just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming. Well, you'll get there eventually.
Yeah. So I'm so glad that our mutual friend said I should connect with you and get you on my show. This has been a really fun, and I know for the listeners, a really valuable conversation to think about so many
things. Well, I have enjoyed it.
So great. And I need to get you on another time and we can talk all things equine photography.
We need to get on and talk about introverts and extroverts. That would be fun.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
But horse photography too is always a fun topic.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thank you very much. And everybody remember to stay tuned for my quickie wrap up. All righty. I'm resuming. That's what I clicked. Resume this recording. As Betsy has ridden off into the sunset on her horse. So I love this conversation about having a business and being effective and efficient, using your downtime session-wise to you know, promote, grow what you need to do in the business, to work in the business. I love that. But be sure to go to lucydumascoaching.com, Lucy with an I, with any questions you have, or if you're interested in coaching or my online course, anything like that, just get in touch. I would love that. Okay, so here's five little things I wrote down. Number one, set your big goals. Have the bird's eye view. Break it down, like in 5 years, I want to be here, and then figure out what the journey will be all the way down to what do I need to do this month and this week to be moving in that direction. Number two, we talked about how a lot of what she does is automated. So like she'll do dozens of Instagram or Facebook posts and schedule them out. And she'll do it in this time when the phone's not ringing or it might be too cold to be doing outdoor photography, you know, just those times when there's more time on our hands. Number three, well, I think this is two and three is kind of blended, but the background planning and so forth, and taking time blocks to do what you need to do. Number four, get help. There's all kinds of ways to get help. I didn't say that my first assistant was a housekeeper, because having that freedom of knowing once a week everything's going to be spiffed up and clean, that I make more money doing other things than vacuuming. So finding those things that you don't love to do and that you don't need to do, and outsourcing, you may think you can't afford it, but I feel like I can't afford not to. What else? And then we talked about how that's not a one size fits all. There's different ways of structuring our lives so that we get things accomplished and we move forward and we get to those goals. So thank you, everybody, for listening and sharing this. And I hope you're having a really great week or day or minute. And if I could give you a great big hug, there's the hug, I would. All right. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Highly Profitable Photographer with Lucy Dumas. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate, subscribe, review, and share. To connect one-on-one and learn more about our coaching programs, just go to lucydumascoaching.com. Until next time, go have fun photographing and selling your work.